that's what the thing is, really. You are cursed with these great low rates that make alternative energy hard to justify purely on an economic standpoint.
Yeah. Read the long paper before. My impression based on the payback rates of your home solar is that the return on your investment is very, very low in this area.
With a higher fixed cost, it is. I've looked at it many times, and it's a longer ROI because of the base charge.
Yeah.
Base charges.
Of course, if you're trying to save the planet, that's one thing, but if you're trying to pay yourself back, that's
not. Who wants to save the planet for the grandkids?
Well, no.
That's one of my comments I was going to make, though. We forget about it. News I can still tell, solar does not emit any CO2 compared to my frame coal.
Frank, would you like to weigh in on that one?
Well, ongoing operation, sure.
Well, we'll go ahead and defer just to talking about finances here and not necessarily about macro environmental issues. Jim, you want to finish up on that?
Sure. So anyway, that's kind of the side-by-side comparison of the three options, and then wanted to look at the pros and cons of the three options. So with option one, our current rate structure, it has the highest amount of revenue stability of the three options, and that really is because that $2.47 per kW charge is a very dependable revenue stream every month versus depending on kWh usage. And then it definitely rewards high excess generators. That 8 cents to 9.6 cents per kWh, if you can do a lot of excess generating, then that can be a big, you know, reduction to your bill.
I guess I have a question about that, because I read that on the next one too, when it talks about the prolific excess generators would be hurt. We don't allow that because
we
allow capped at 100% or 110%.
It's 100% of your estimated annual load, estimated or real. But there are, because the capacity factor does vary, there may be seasons when you produce more than you're using within that usage block. So
for that season, but in the year, your restriction.
Total, in theory, things should should even out.
Should. And then as far as the cons go, and this would be from the customer side of things, it is the highest base charge of the three options. And then the buyback rate, and this is again comments from council last July, the buyback rate exceeding what it costs to buy power from Platte River. With the second option, and that's the one that does away with that solar capacity charge, the pros with that one is that it would be the lowest, if you want to call it, monthly base charge of the three scenarios. And this one would reward high net usage customers. So if you are a big consumer and you have very little excess generation, this is a better scenario for you because of the buyback rate being the lowest of the three. The downsides would be the adverse impact on the high excess generators. So again, we talked about that. If you're going to be getting 4.75 cents per kWh of your excess generation instead of 8 or 9.6, that's going to be impact your bill upward. And then this one has the least amount of revenue stability of the three. And then for the third option, the pros would be that the buyback rate would be aligned with Platte River's cost, which was something that, again, we did hear from council. And this one is kind of a middle ground of the three options. Option one is sort of on one end of the spectrum. Option two is on the other end of the spectrum. This one is more in the middle. The cons, less revenue certainty compared to option one. And then the residential solar customers with this one would still have a higher monthly overall base charge than a regular residential customer, which again, as you said, Councilor Olson, you and some of the other councilors had voiced concern about. So I would say the great majority, almost all the time when we come to you looking for a recommendation, we feel like we have a very strong recommendation to come to you with. In the case of this one, our recommendation is option three. Having said that, all three could work. And ran all three of these by Mark Beauchamp, our consultant, and he said all three could work. So we our leaning as staff is to 3 because it is sort of that middle ground, not one that we would die on the sword over. So that's why we very much would value whatever recommendation you would want for us to take to council.
And I think one of the other drivers, though, was the fact that it recognizes that the energy that's being produced by a self-generating customer is purchased at exactly the same rate as the energy purchased from the wholesale power producer. I think for me that was the biggest driver.
So, an hour and 7 minutes in, we've at least gotten to the end of the slides. We would welcome any more questions or comments, and ultimately what we are looking for is a recommendation on both the methodology for calculating the base charge and then for an approach to, and again, these are not going to be the exact numbers, but just how would you like us to go ahead with designing? Larry?
So first, do we have any self-gens now doing it that already have installed storage on the property?
That I don't know.
Larry, I do not know.
I would say that that's a future coming down the pike, and that's going to probably cause different rates again.
It will.
They'll have done different things. So
funny you mentioned that, Larry, because we had a meeting last week with our brethren and sisterin from Fort Collins that are in the finance groups, and Fort Collins is, we heard out loud 2 days in a row, they are subsidizing their solar customers. That's what they have, their city council has given them direction to do. Something they are concerned about, because they have time of use rates, they are, so depending on what time, what that is in a nutshell, what time of day you buy energy is gonna dictate how much you pay for that energy. So it's kind of, it's the most elaborate rate structure that there is out there. But what they are concerned about is having solar customers that generate and store things in batteries and then sell back when the price is at the highest level. So that they're not there yet, but that's where they think the wind could be blowing.
So to speak.
I think that's good.
Yes.
As opposed to sunshine.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, as we've talked about from time to time on the LUC in terms of what our role is, it seems like our role falls in the wheelhouse of revenue certainty. I like that language. Can you elaborate on what you mean by less revenue certainty compared to option one?
Sure. So with option one, that $2.47 per kW of installed capacity, that's a very certain revenue stream compared to kWh. And so
sorry to interrupt. Is that on that table? Could you go back to that so we can see everything together?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe this is an easier way to see it. So this, it's essentially an addition to the base charge, and it's an automatic charge every month. So that is a very certain revenue compared to what we might get from a kWh charge. The second one has the least amount of revenue certainty because that goes to zero. So we're more dependent on the kWh in order to reach that 57,000. And then the third one is in the middle. It doesn't have as much revenue certainty as this one, but it has more than the middle one. And yeah, like I said, there's pros and cons with each
of these. And I'm not trying to pick on you, but just so that I understand it. So the certainty being certain that you're going to get more in option one than in option three?
Higher level of confidence that you're going to reach your revenue that you need to get from that customer class.
Okay, thank you.
If that's what we
yep.
Well, first of all, I have complete confidence in his prediction of building. with Mr. Rester. I thought someone, and it was either, would have been from your department or maybe from the R&L people, I thought someone said our average kW capacity that we have for self-gens now is right around 2. Am I wrong?
Four to five average?
I'm going to say 4 or 5.
Yeah. I'm wearing, yeah, Frank,
four
does
five
that?
Average?
Does that sound right? 4 to 5 kW average size of unit?
Yeah, I thought
five was that high. You're talking about kW of the solar installed?
Yeah, the capacity of a solar unit for our customers, 4 to 5 average probably?
That's about right. We are starting to see some larger installations now, about 10 kW.
Okay. So we'd be adding $4 or $5 under option 3 compared to about $12 under option 1 per month.
Right.
Do the math on that again slower, Larry. I'm sorry. You'd be at how much?
He was talking to John about, 4 or 5 kW times either 247 or 96 cents.
Yeah. I was still doing Frank's 10 size. Sorry.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get a motion on the floor for the first item, which has to do with the monthly base charge. I move to recommend that City Council direct staff to use the minimum system requirement methodology to calculate the base charge for all customer classes for 2020.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion on that?
Just a question.
Yes.
On the chart, which option is that?
So that's...
Well, it's the prior, right?
There's two parts.
Prior part.
Yep. This is the first part of it.
So when we were talking about earlier, how do we come up with the base charge, either using the MSR, which is now $15.50 versus the $26 baked in charge for everything?
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Okay, it's unanimous.
I don't oppose, but I abstain because I wasn't here for most of the conversation. I still don't understand it.
Okay.
But that's not a reflection of staff. I just don't get it.
Okay, well, we still had a majority here, so it passed. So,
what for this commission, what does abstain mean? Because the commissions are different than what that means.
His vote will not count.
Okay. Just want to clarify that.
Yeah.
Council, it's an automatic yay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Unless you're ready, your second.
Okay, and his second part of it.
So I move to recommend.
And I'll just, sorry to cut you off, Dan. We were still discussing this at the time of press for that.
Yeah.
So what we did recommend was the option 3 as staff.
That's what we're going to do.
And we're going to have discussion after that.
Yeah, we'll have discussion after that. Okay.
So I move to recommend that City Council direct staff to use option 3. Is that sufficient reference? Mm-hmm. As presented today, for designing the rates for 2020 for the residential self-generating class.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Gene seconded. Okay, now discussion. Larry, you had something you wanted?
Well, I have some comments.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was in that your argument there or not, but one of the things, and I know there's been big discussion between the renewable people and other people over the fixed charges and all that, but I, after reading as much as I could read for a couple of hours, I do clearly feel, you know, if we assume Mark knows how to do fixed costs, and I was impressed by him in that. So we do need to have all the classes pay their fair share of fixed costs. And you've already heard me talk about small general. I didn't like that we're still subsidizing them, which we are. And we need to be very transparent so we don't, when we come out of this rate study with the new costs, that everybody feels like they got hurting at the citizens, especially the self-gens people. I also think, you know, we are representing monopoly, and self-gens are probably the only competition around. So I think we need a lot. I think that's healthy, that we understand, and we need to understand sometimes the big gorilla, if they're called PRPA, probably wish they'd never heard of self-gens, or at least some of them. So we need to give everyone a chance and hear their voice. We also didn't make any comment, and I know that's also debatable, but I still believe that our self-gens do help reduce our peak demand. I know this holographic doesn't always coincide, but it comes close. And that's good, and I think that's healthy, and we need to promote that. And so if we're going to do any favoritism or any little one incentive, I think that's a healthy place to put it. Plus the fact they don't generate CO2. And you know, everyone knows what I think of CO2. And I don't even have grandkids, but I don't want to fry your grandkids.
Well, hold your breath.
So I'm in support of what you said, because it is a middle ground. And I'm still really bothered about my analogy to a 6,000 square foot house to a 2,000 square foot house. And I go back to when I lived in Wyoming, out on a golf course, we paid a monthly fee for water, for the water we watered. And we had these really wealthy people from Southern California that watered 10 hours a day. And actually, the guys that went up to mow were afraid they were going to sink into the swamp. I don't call that practicing conservation. I prefer we practice conservation, which I think is more healthy with the planet. So yes, I support what the staff has proposed.
Okay, any more discussion?
Well, I think I like the option three, because it does cover the same base charge, you know, for all customers being connected to the system and so forth. But I do like the charge per kilowatt being kind of that middle ground. I think that that would be perceived by the particular solar customers as more advantageous, as well as the payback, you know, for the energy delivered from them.
Okay, Steve?
I don't want to upset the apple cart on this vote, but just for when you come to council, recognizing that Fort Collins subsidizes solar, what would be the impact revenue-wise, the cost of the city, if we had, if everything was, it was a level playing field, the self-generators got the same rate and the reimbursement was
wholesale?
The wholesale rate. In other words, option two, the reimbursement would be the 0.62.
What would be the revenue shortfall?
Okay. Yeah, what would be the revenue impact? Because okay. I think council may at some point want to subsidize.
Okay.
But
we can have that at the ready.
To add on to that, I actually had a note, because I would be proud of council if they did that. But I think we know there will be a time limit. Because with Platte River going to net zero, they're going to be competition against the solar, because they will, from my viewpoint.
So that was going to be my comment is, I'm honestly surprised there wasn't an option four of getting rid of this class and treating the $57,000 shortfall and adding that to the residential class. And so by taking that shortfall, everybody's charge goes up, let's say 5 cents or whatever that equates to. And if you keep the rates the same.
Well, it wouldn't be a $57,000 shortfall. $57,000 is what they pay now.
Correct. Total. Which in theory, the $57,000 additional charge to combat the shortfall that class is taking against
their... It's not an additional $57,000.
It's additional line item.
No. It's what you residential customers pay total.
Yep.
It's not an addition to. It's their total, unless I'm misunderstanding.
No, that's correct. That's the total amount of money to support this rate class.
If we take that
2 cents out,
right,
it's going to be what, $5,000 maybe?
That's
what I'm asking.
Some smaller number.
So that was just I'm surprised, and so I'm glad the council is asking for that. Come prepared with a subsidized offer or option to council.
We can do that. It would be a departure, because we've never subsidized any of our rate classes previously, but that's something that can be done.
And I'm not saying I'm necessarily in for or against it.
And I'm not saying councils go for it, but I know some would.
Yep.
Okay. I would disagree with you. because when we have small general, that's 30% below cost of service. You cannot call it subsidizing, but that's what it is. And that's
I would see that differently, though, Larry, because that's not by design. Our goal is to get all of our rate classes to cost of service. We've never made a conscious choice to say, okay, we are going to subsidize this class, and it's going to be intentional.
Need to tell Mark not to call it when he said 3 years ago we're subsidizing solar and we need to change this rate structure.
Right, and so we did it over a 2 year period, and you're right, it is the same. And I mean that's why we do the studies every 3 years, is to try to make sure that we don't have we have as little subsidizing going on as possible.
We didn't do it with small general.
Well, that's what I said earlier. You guys could have the prerogative to say, okay, raise small general by 25%. In one shot, that could be done.
Okay, Sean, you got a question?
I think I did, but I've gotten it confused in my own head, so I won't try to say it out loud.
All right. We got a motion and a second on the floor. Let's go ahead and vote on that. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, well, let's go with a hand. Those that approve the motion, raise their right hand. Those who oppose, right hand. Okay, I think we have a majority of
five
pass.
5-2, yeah. Is that
what it is? And we will bring back we'll call it option 4 with that for the presentation, and all of the other comments that were made about examples and so on when we come before council on the 14th of next month.
So that we're clear, Tom, was your idea that to have the buyback rate be 6.2 cents per kilowatt, basically what it costs us to buy from Platte River? That's your thought? Because, I mean, you see, you're talking about blending the solar customers in with the residential customers, but there is that buyback element that's there for the solar that is not for the residential. So
I think you'd still have to do the calculation.
Right.
Yeah. You'd still have to do the calculation with them as a separate class.
Right.
Because you want to figure what that delta is that you're going to have to spread over the balance of the residential customers.
Right. So
my thought is in option 1 versus option 3, if my usage is the same in both options, my costs are the same in both options, so my ROI on a solar system is the same no matter what.
Should be the same.
Should be the same, right? Barring cost of upgrades.
Am I allowed to talk? Sorry.
Sure.
I don't know if you want to raise up my hand and say something. No, because it's going to depend on what you sell back to the utility.
Right, but let's say that's a constant between both options.
And
so for me, I'm always a net zero customer.
And it will be different. You're right.
But for like one particular use case, if I'm constant, let's say I only net usage 100, I'm getting billed for 100 kW a month because of my usage and my consumption. In option 1 or option 3, in theory, it'll be, at the end of the day, it'll be the same bill.
Over the long run.
Over the long run, yes. And to truly, quote unquote, subsidize like Fort Collins is, you have to not have a different buyback rate and not a different monthly charge to do that. Not saying that I want to do that. I'm just saying if that's the option they're requesting.
Okay. I'm a little confused because I think what we did was recommended option 3.
We did.
Yeah. But you said you're going to bring an option 4.
Which is the one where we would have a monthly base, which essentially would be a subsidy for the solar self-gen customers, so that we can have council evaluate that as well.
I think if I'm understanding right, it would essentially be this, but then that's zero.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
So could you send out a new chart to us then, since we forget things fast, on what this with option 4 on?
Option 4 would just be this goes to zero, everything else is the same.
It'll be in the council packet if you want to download that.
So the motion we made is option 3.
3.
Yes.
And I would still stand by that staff recommendation. Even with the addition of an option 4, I would still stand by that as a staff recommendation.
So councilor asked for that information to come be available should the subsidizing discussion.
Yep.
That's what option 4 would respond to
at the council
meeting.
So you're saying you'd like to see this slide amended to add option
4? Yep.
With option 4. Just send the spreadsheet out.
To you?
Well, I think I'll send it to everybody. So
I was just going to say, Jim, to take the 96 cents out and give it a, the same base charge, works out to about $1,400.
$1,400, is that okay?
Call it a dollar per customer, it's 124 or 142, which was it, 142 or 124? It's 124, so it's $124 a month times 12 months.
That would help.
So you're looking at about $1,400 a year.
Sean, you got a question?
Well, I think it's a great question that got raised about option four is, we voted on option three absent option four. And I think that's important for the council to know.
I agree. And
it may be if we had an option four, we might have voted for option four, but we don't know since we haven't seen it. And I don't know how that lands with the council. And it may be option four has no place in the LUC and it's completely a council political
That's right.
Decision.
I think Steve asked for the option four at the study session. So we approved option three. I think we should just move on from there.
I would agree to say it's more of a political decision than a commission decision.
I would agree, Tom, because that's marching orders council's never given us, and so.
Jim, yes, again, none of these figures are based on figures for 2000 prior to the cost of study, and so they will change somewhat when Mark does all his calculations.
Yes.
But again, it's the methodology that is being
That's what we wanted to get a read from you all on was an approach both for the base charge and then for the designing the solar rate. Yep.
If I could finish my thought, and Commissioner Olson, if it's decided by the council at the work session that option four is attractive, and you want to utilize the LUC in the fashion of touching base to see what that feels like, the subsidy, I mean, absent numbers, we can't provide that sort of feedback. So if they're inclined to say, yeah, we like it, and let's get the LUC to look at it, that could be something we could do.
And we'll have those numbers shown.
Historically, I've seen council get recommendations from boards and commissions, and they make their own decisions. So if they like option four, they'll go with option four. So I don't think anything that we say here right now is probably going to be pertinent at their study session.
That's a bit of a mixed message, because I think we've heard from Commissioner Olson that these boards are important and they want to hear from us. So if they feel that way, I just want to make that clear. Is we haven't seen that, we'd be happy to look at it.
And we'll make sure that is in the presentation, Sean. Absolutely.
And we've had the discussion and we voted on option three. So, yeah.
How many electrical customers do we have?
About 36,000.
And we're talking about
124.
Okay, let's move on to item number five. So let's.
That's you too, Jim.
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah. I know you're more than tired of me already.
Yeah. Proposed 10-year capital improvement plan.
Yes, and my part in this is going to be very brief. We have assembled and submitted the 10-year CIPs to the budget office, and in the midst of putting those together, we did have to program in $14.2 million of additional borrowing versus what we had a year ago. And really the driver for that was three things. There's a water project from East Gravity Zone water line along 28th Street Southwest from Taft to Garfield to Highway 402. That project last year's plan was a 24-inch line. It's been changed to a 36-inch line, so costs went up with that, and we had to increase borrowing for that. The second thing was the Chimney Hollow, the estimate for Chimney Hollow, which is, Larry, is it 4.6 million higher than it was a year ago? I believe that's the number. And then the third thing is, We plugged in 2026, expanding this glorious facility. And this building opened up in 1987 and has served us very well for 32 years, but we are at the point of kind of crying uncle, and so we're going to need to expand it for additional staff in the years down the road. So we did plug that in, and that required some borrowing, not across all the utilities, but in a couple of them. So With that, I'll turn it over to either Tanner or Frank, whoever wants to walk through the capital projects.
Okay, we'll try and go relatively quick through these. In your packet, you have a handful of projects that were called out specifically. You also have these spreadsheets here that have everything. So we've tried to go through the biggest, maybe the most interesting, but if there's ones of particular interest on these spreadsheets, we can touch on them too. So with that being said, we'll start off with some raw water. So I can at least somewhat speak intelligently on this, but Larry can obviously answer further questions. There's additional money budgeted for 2020 of about $4.3 million just for the reasons Jim just indicated. I think everybody else has probably heard lots about Chimney Hollow, so we'll move
on. Is that gravity feed down between the reservoirs? Or do they come from different sources?
They're not connected directly. They're both filled from pumps down at the bottom.
Yeah. Okay, so they both have to be pumped up?
Right,
okay.
And they're operated independently, so they're not connected, you know, with the same surface level.
Okay. Other one on the raw water side is at the downstream end of our system. We've recently purchased the Kaufman pit for future augmentation use. And so what's going to happen over the next year, or for next year, is we're budgeted a little over $400,000 to go around and armor the outsides of the banks of this reservoir. Then, and that's just in case there's flooding events or anything that would get into this pond in the meantime. But otherwise, pump station design construction is proposed to begin in 2029.
Question?
Yep.
Was there talk at some point, or I'm imagining it, that that might be a park facility in the future?
I don't know about park. There's a future road that has been planned through here for a long, long time. Ties into the what road is it with the big curve, South Boyd Lake Avenue. There's been talk about maybe future recreation. Larry, you want to?
We talked about it early on, but that didn't seem to go anywhere much at the time. The trail system is working on getting down through there, so there'll be that. But if you're talking about fishing or something, not currently aware of any plans for our Parks Department.
Actually angling for the Parks Department to pay for the riprap.
The pump station would be even better.
Is this the only gravel pit that we're purchasing, or do we have other property with another pit?
At the moment, it's all that's planned.
This is the only one that we're purchasing. There are other options around, but this one for us worked very well because it's located downstream from the outfall at our wastewater treatment plant, and strategically it's located upstream of the Hillsborough ditch diversion point in the river, and our major decrees, both of our major decrees, require the city to make its returns to the river above the Hillsborough ditch, so that it was just in the right place.
It'll be a really cool project. You can fill about half of it via gravity and then dump out the top half via gravity too. So when the time comes, it'll be a really neat project. One other raw water project that's been discussed, and we have budget for $1.5 million for next year, and we're doing a study right now to make sure this is feasible, but you can see Green Ridge Glade Reservoir in this aerial photo. When the original reservoir was enlarged 15 years or so ago, there were some HDP pipes laid around the reservoir, which is how the city got their water out of the canal during construction of the dam. Two of those were left in place. There was always talk that perhaps different waste streams pumped back into the reservoir. We're now looking at, with the algae that everybody heard about a couple years ago, and with some of the construction that took place in the river, could we utilize these pipes to bring water off the canal and bring it to the water treatment plant? Wouldn't meet peak summer demand, but we've had some of the algae issues in the fall, or if there's river issues, this is water that could be blended or brought straight into the plant. So we're in a feasibility study right now. We think it's certainly feasible. We'll have to figure out if it makes sense, but it's planned for next year.
Is that the diversion from the CBT ditch?
Yep. It's really good at different spots to tie into that canal, and the pluses and minuses to different locations. But
that's a good idea.
Since the pipes are already in place, it's certainly a good option. A lot more redundancy. Moving over to the water side, I left this one on there. You don't see it on that list as I was updating the spreadsheet, but we are at some point going to be funding a significant portion of a pump station that will sit at the west end of 29th Street that will feed what we call the P2 zone. Any development really north of the end of 29th Street be fed out of this pump station. So it's kind of a carryover from year to year.
Hasn't happened yet. Sorry.
Yeah.
When you say significant portion, that sounds like not all of it. Who's funding the other
25% portion? Is our portion. The rest is by for future development. Future development pays their way in that pump station. We already have customers that will be served by that pump station once it's built. That's the city portion of it.
Okay.
We break down on this chart, on this Excel spreadsheet, the first page roughly is all replacement of existing water mains. There's been a lot of talk at this commission on different philosophies and then also different projects we've taken to repair leaky water lines. This is just a map of segments that have had at least 5 known leaks, all little purple circles. Without getting into real detail, there's a whole bunch of them. And so right now, over the next 10 years, we're budgeting almost $42 million of water line replacement, which is... go ahead.
Yeah, the water line that was here replaced on Wilson.
Yep.
Going further north, is that something that has to be considered? It seems like that may have all been installed at the same time.
Yeah, that's a hard one that we have almost everywhere in town. Is a lot of times we have segments that were installed as one project, but whether it's funds or where leaks have happened, we're always limited on having to stop somewhere. Yeah. And that stretch, there were not known, we did not have leaks north of there.
Yeah.
I can't promise that that's going to happen. I shouldn't have even said that, but yeah. It was and also where we stopped was between different pressure zones. So it made sense where to stop, and it's also where the leaks had stopped. Whether that soil conditions are different age, it's always an issue.
Yeah.
So that's a big driver, but it's something that is real important. One key project, it falls in that same category, but it is west of town. We have 3 water lines bring water to town, a 48-inch steel pipe, a 36-inch, and a 20. This 36-inch line is built in 62. It's not in very good shape. How about that? So significant corrosion, quite a few leaks. It's a real long stretch. This is from where you turn off to go up to our water treatment plant in the meadows. Across the river in a few spots, and after the flood, we wound up going in and replacing segments of that and saw the condition. In addition to spots where our guys have fixed the leaks, we saw some spots of very poor condition. So it's a big dollar amount, but it's much cheaper right now to be planned to line that, but it's out there quite a few years right now.
So a mile and a half costs $7 million.
In that neighborhood at that size.
Question, sorry,
yep.
Jumping back to the water line replacement, I apologize, I didn't ask you.
No, you're good.
The 41-6,
yep.
Over 9-ish years.
Yep.
I think the LUC in the past has said, geez, we'd like to see more line replacements. How does that compare? It seems like we were trending upwards towards doing more and more of those, and I think you may have mentioned when you started.
Definitely. A couple years ago, we had 3 years of $2 million a year. We've had a couple years that's been less than that. 1% a year would be about $7 million a year. This is $4.1 million over the 10 years. So it's trending in the right direction. But it's not at 1%. I know it's been bandied about. But you'd see at some point we'd like to get rid of all the purple circles. We just picked 5 known leaks just as a spot. There's a lot of other ones, but hopefully, you know, as all utilities want to get some point to get to a proactive spot instead of being as reactive. This will hopefully help get us there.
I apologize. This by now, refresh my memory on who pays CIPs. Is that the ratepayers? Is that New Growth?
This is ratepayers, what we call general money, replacements, stuff that's already been used. We'll get to some other products that are more based on future customers. SIF, what we call it, system impact fees, which
right.
would be plant expansions, new water tanks. There's some new water lines on here. I'll remember to point those out for future capacity.
Yep.
And a handful of these products are split, but this rehab. Jobs, these would all be 100% general ratepayer, current ratepayer money.
Thank you.
So I have a question. When I try to go back and pick how many miles of pipe we have,
yep.
it over the last 5 years, if I'm right, it's not changing much. So can I assume, even the developments we have going in, we're really not adding any significant percentages of water line?
We are. I don't have that chart in front of me. We're at 430 some miles right now. I didn't look at how many we've added last year or the year before, but every year at the end of the year, they do an audit of whatever's in that in our GIS system.
It looks like if the population grows by 10%, our mileage doesn't grow by 10%.
Probably not. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So you got to remember there's all these other transmission mains and everything else out there too. Here's one of these big SIF projects. Jim mentioned it. This has been planned for a long, long time. We're at Taft right here, 287. Long term, we need a water line to go from Taft down County Road 16. It can either go this way or it could come this way, depending on what's proposed, through the southeast corner of Lincoln and 287, and eventually get to St. Louis. We have a short stretch right here. This is what we call a southeast gravity loop. This pipe has increased in size. The budget's not all about the increase in size. It's been planned for a long, long time, and as costs have gone up and re-looking at the costs of building this project, numbers have gone up. Why the pipe has gone up, people might wonder, why is the size larger than it's been planned for a long time? As the city looks to serve 402 off the page out here, that originally had not always been factored as much growth out there and as much of the area that we would serve. So as that increases, that plan for the city, the water line through here went from a 24 to a 36.
How does that tie into the tank down at Campion Road in Taft? Would that be a mile south?
Yeah, the tank's just off the...
So is there a significant piece of pipe that gets down there that they're tying into?
Right now there's a 24-inch water line that comes down, weaves around, I gotta get my bearings straight, comes this way, goes down to that tank.
Okay, so you took your finger right past.
Yeah, it's
the
off
west.
The page over here.
Yeah, but it comes by the west end of the red line there.
Yep. Okay. Comes right by here.
So we're
what this is going to help do, that tank is a long ways away from our system. Without getting too in the weeds here, this will help move water out of that tank that's so far away, and we'll also get water out east, where obviously there's a lot of growth going on. Most systems have a loop all the way around their system. We don't have one that comes around this direction. So this will be really, really important to get water out east. It will help our operations significantly, both in tanks and pumping. It's a big deal, but this one's a split cost project. Just like you're saying, we get by right now, so it's obviously not paid all by existing general money. There's a big portion of this that's paid by future development. So it's gonna happen out east as all this begins to fill in, so.
Okay, so I live off County Road 16. Where does that pipe go to? That you're proposing.
This proposed pipe?
Yeah.
We have existing pipes under the street right here in Taft.
Oh, so that would connect, come...
Yeah, it's going to tie to other pipelines.
Okay.
On all ends, there's existing pipes that would tie to.
Because I thought it was going way out.
Yeah, yeah.
16.
No, it'll just stop right here.
There's a lake there.
could sell your house before 2029.
Yeah, exactly.
These are hard ones.
Although I'm on high ground, I'm not worried.
Yeah, they're hard to fit in the budget, and they're hard to plan for, based on when development happens.
Right.
What we just talked about, Highway 402, our waterline system ends at St. Louis right now, but obviously there's a lot of interest in this corridor, and there may be a lot of interest out here at the intersection, and so as the city is going to provide service to that area. Right now, a lot of it's served by a relatively small water system by Little Thompson Water District. So it's a large investment to get water line out that direction.
When you say intersection, you're talking about I-25.
And 402, yep.
And sorry, would that would be 100% SIF since there's no existing customers out there?
Yep.
And frankly, there's a corridor plan underway right now in our planning department, and we've been providing input to them regarding utilities costs. There are a number of, we'll be bringing that to council. I honestly don't know what the schedule is, but it's going to go to council next 60 days or so. One of the options is, instead of financing this way, would be to form an improvement district.
Yeah. It's a hard one. Obviously, if someone develops all the way out there and you got to build all this water line, how do you do it? So
now isn't the reality that the Loveland has the southwest quadrant of the interchange, and then Johnstown has the other three?
That's correct.
So that needs to be kept track of as well.
We
It's well aware, yep, yep.
That was going to be my question. What property does Johnstown have out there?
They have the northwest quadrant that's already.
Would Little Thompson defer their service?
We've been having very, very productive discussions with them.
Sure, because it costs them.
And there's been a change on council over Johnstown that they seem to be more willing to work with Loveland.
To de-annex or work with Loveland?
What's that?
To de-annex or work with
Loveland? Well, no, to collaborate on that corner. It's still where everybody benefits,
sure,
rather than competing.
It's probably good to note that the year is approximate, so it gets in this budget, but what happens, we don't know. That's probably spurred by development and other factors.
We'd really like to use their wastewater because it's gravity other than pumping.
Actually, it's just as expensive.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So
one more on
yep.
that. And would it be timed such that when the development occurred before the 402 expansion occurs, it'll be planned then, or we'll have to rip up the road, and is that in the 11.7?
You're going to see, that's in the 11.7. That's sure. That's with an asphalt number in it.
Okay.
You'll see a bigger number on the wastewater side, and that is the big conundrum, is if we had to go build it right now, there's not easement. You're in that existing corridor. We're affecting traffic. The future corridor that it would be planned would actually, I mean, it'd be way south of the road is what's been proposed. Anyway, that's the big conundrum is do you build it before stuff gets there, but then you don't have any revenue to pay for what you just built. So there's a lot of questions and a lot of policy to direct this project, and you'll see the same on the wastewater side.
Sure.
And that's part of the problem statement. Is there's some thought that the developments held up because it doesn't have the water or the wastewater.
Right.
So,
or the I mean,
it's all, already been annexed, some of that. The Olson property.
Yep. A lot of questions on this one, still to come.
We should have the solar subsidies.
On that note, we'll move on to water tanks. This is one that if you ever travel out west by the solar field, you can see this arrow didn't even have the solar field on here. To Rio Blanco on 29th, you'll see we have one water tank, but you also have maybe seen a sign on a fence out there saying home of a future second Loveland water tank there. And that is coming next year. We're in the process right now of hiring a firm to help us design this water tank, and next year is the plan to build it. The existing one out there is 4 million gallons. This will be 5, if not slightly larger than 5 million gallons. So this has been planned for a very long time. Tom could talk to him. It's been delayed for a good 10 years for budget reasons, and it's at a time where we really need it to serve not only existing customers, but some future customers as well. So it's exciting for engineers and for a lot of people who have been here for a long time. So it's a big dollar amount, as you can see. So.
So it's going to be above the ground, evidently.
This picture's a little misleading. It'll have the same water surface level as the existing steel tank with the big dome, but it'll be flat roofed. The back, probably third or so, will be in the hillside if it's where we've planned right now. So we got pending geotech investigations and final decisions. About a third of it will be probably within the existing ground.
That's a good idea.
From the west side, from the east side, it won't be. So.
It's adjacent to the existing tank, right? Yeah.
The plan is to be just north. There's the option to put it immediately east. We'll see as we get into geotech considerations.
Will the 1% for art paint it?
You got all kinds of good ideas today. So I'm looking to Joe.
Well, we sure put solar panels on top of it.
Yeah.
I don't know about that one, but one more tank that's in the proposal. Everything north of there is what we call our P1 zone. It's a big zone, if I had the map up here. There's an existing water tank that serves that zone at the very far end of 43rd. I just cut it off on the picture here. It's time, based on all the metrics that we use, to build a second tank there. And so that's why it's planned here in, 5 years, to build a 3.5 million gallons, the number we got right now pegged for the future build out of that pressure zone. And that's take about 60% of a max day demand in case you didn't have it's for emergency storage, for fire, pumps go out, whatever it may be. So that's how it's sized. And so that'll be coming up. 2024 is planned to start design with building it the year after. They're big dollar items, so.
Well,
So all these tanks we pump up to them and then gravity fed out?
Yep. The first one we just showed you, we don't pump it, but it just gravity feeds from the water plant. But this one, yes, it's definitely pumped. But it's at grade. It'll be the same as the one that's out there right now. It's fairly hidden. That's the back side of it. It's only a little bit sticking up above grade.
The ones on 29th are gravity feed?
From the water plant, yes. We can speed water up to it, but it's gravity fed. One more thing that's kind of exciting. If you've ever been to our water plant, this is what part of the front entryway looks like. Most of that you see on the screen is not used anymore. But not only that, just the whole lobby area, the offices, it's very, very dated. I think that's probably an understatement.
So is that chair.
Yeah.
We'll take care of that too.
Yep.
Don't worry. We'll get that
one. Useful life.
If you walk in there, you wouldn't think, it doesn't show the quality of the water and the quality of the work that goes on there. And it's not as functional anymore for what happens now at the plant. So we're going to update that building, remodel, but also make it more functional. Meeting rooms, bathrooms, offices, things like that. So. And then Jim alluded to the plan of expanding this building. So I'll leave that where it is, 2026. There's a significant portion budgeted out of water and wastewater for that.
So that's a water treatment office is updated, and at the same time we're doing the new one down at wastewater.
Yeah.
That one's going to go is
next
going
year.
Soon?
Next year. That's actually coming up here. But yeah, we're actually today interviewed and hired an architect to help us do both of these, to do a preliminary study at both plants. Wastewater actually is planned for next year. It's not part of the project that's going on right now, but we'll redo the same story. As the lab moves out of there, and same thing, nothing's been touched in a long time, to redo it all. Make it way more functional and just look much better as well.
Okay.
You'll see that in a minute.
Yes, sir.
Sewer side, similar to how we rehab water lines, we rehabilitate sanitary sewers every other year. Some years it's going to be more than every other year, but through a CIPP lining process. Sometimes they have to dig them up and fix them, but there's a lot of sewer. This is probably a pretty bad stretch, but sewer lines, where you see roots coming into the old clay joints, especially sewers that are in backyards with lots of roots and trees. So we have a significant amount of money budgeted to rehabilitate those, not only to make sure service, to prevent backups, but also prevent what we call I&I, inflow and infiltration. One, when it rains, also base flows from coming in all the time through these joints. The less water comes in, the less we have to treat at the wastewater plant. So quite a bit of budget in that department. Oops. What were we just talking about, 402. This is the sewer side of it. Without getting into a lot of detail, gathering sewer from this whole basin. It's estimated right now about $16 million. There's a lot. We have quite a few reports, spreadsheets, everything else that come into this, but this is just the same story we talked about on water.
So when you do these estimates, where do you get your inflation factors from?
We come up with modern day estimates right now. This is like 14 something. And then budget guys put in the inflation factors based on the ENR, Engineering News Record magazine. Is that fair?
Yep.
Jim?
Yes, we get information from Alan Kirchmerick, actually, that's built into the both of both water waste and power projections for capital project costs.
It actually seems, if you said 32, I would have said that seems right. But
I'm nervous, even though it seems like a big number. And we built a mile of sewer this summer. You guys probably saw it on Boise and Madison, and it was over $5 million for a mile.
Wow.
It was really deep, 20 some feet deep. This will have a 30-foot section deep. So you imagine how would you build a 30-foot section of sewer right now in that existing corridor? It's going to be expensive. So, yeah. A delay here. There we go. Dewatering facilities way out there. Right now we take our sludge and land apply it off the digesters. Long-term plan, the way most places in the industry are going, is to dewater and separate out that water and solids best you can. And so that's a big dollar amount, but what you see is just the engineering piece and some of the planning, the $2 some million. If you looked into the off the 10-year budget, then there's this $15, $16 million estimate for dewatering. So right now, it's planned. It just isn't happening anytime soon.
Is that a good ratio, 8-to-1 architectural? Is that architecture?
I'd say 10. We roughly say 10-to-1. There's some other numbers in this. There's a study. There's a study before it to look at different options. Usually it's in the 10-to-1-ish category. It depends on how complicated it is. Sometimes the stuff at the plants, that ratio is higher than putting a water line down an 8-inch residential street. So,
is it being recommended because of regulatory reasons?
At some point, it's going to be cheaper to do this than it will be to continue to haul.
We haul a lot of water out of there with our solids. This will reduce that. It'll be more effective. And I'd like to think that the numbers cross and make it very cost effective.
Okay.
Same picture, but different spot here. I think a lot of you guys have been down the wastewater plant taking a tour during the construction. So this new digester 3 and 4 being built right now, they're going to get water in them. They're getting water in right now, but process coming in the next month, which is pretty exciting. The existing two digesters were planned a couple years ago, and at the time it made sense, let's go ahead and get these things built. Capacity-wise, the existing two equal the size of one. But those future are needed long term. Right now they won't be needed in the present form they're in, but they will be needed long term. And so there's a project a little over $6 million to redo all kinds of stuff at those digesters. New mixing system, heating systems, new piping valves, the seals on the roof domes. It's a big project. So it'll be well needed so they operate properly, but fortunately, because we're gonna have these two new ones, we can make it a few more years. The big interceptor I was just talking about that we built further downstream this past year, we need to go do the same thing at the upstream end of that basin is what we is planned right now. So Wilson, Taft, 43rd Street, sanitary sewer comes down, weaves through this neighborhood, past Woodward Governor. As this area all develops, it's a lot more dense than was planned 30 years ago or 40 years ago as people built some of these sewer lines. And so that we need increased capacity.
What's the diameter of that?
Not sure yet. Existing?
No, the proposed.
I would guess it's going to be 24. It could be 30. We found the problem in the model. We've looked roughly at the route, but it's not been formally, we haven't sized it. And how we're going to do it, do we replace the existing one with a large one? Do we parallel it like we did the one this past summer? More to come. It's pretty tight quarters, so it's going to be
kind of like one of our snowtell graphs.
Yeah. Early snow, got a little dry, kind of like that. So. This one's near and dear to Joe's heart. Our wastewater plant smells great all the time, but...
I don't know what that is.
And we're going to look to address one of the primary spots of that odor is off the primary clarifiers. So it's budgeted here in just a couple of years. There's a three-year window there. One is to look at it. We've done a big picture look at it, but to get more detailed and to build it here in the next 5 years. So it's ballparked out about $3 million to cover these clarifiers. Hopefully help a lot with the odors up there. One more thing that was the picture, I didn't do it justice here, but all the flow that comes into the wastewater plant is then pumped almost immediately into those primary clarifiers. So a lot of H2S gas that's generated in that that sewer coming into a large wet well. This is not a picture of actually it, but that concrete degrades with that gas. That becomes spongy, it gets in bad shape. So as we go through and rehabilitate existing lift stations, it'll be the same story. We go in and clean them and then put a coating that's H2S resistant. Makes concrete last a lot longer. It's a big dollar amount, but one big piece of it is you have to bypass all the flow in the wastewater plant. You have to pump it during the duration of the project. So, big project, but it's a very critical piece of infrastructure given that all the flow goes into it. And we just talked about, this is sinking, we just talked about the admin remodel at the water plant, same thing at the wastewater plant. So this comes up next year. Looks like I got my numbers wrong. It should be $110,000. $1.1 million $1,000, let's do that instead. Yeah, and this is the old lab. They rent, they leave, going to the new lab next year. And in addition to that space being refurbished, just all the other office space, all the useful areas that they have, repurpose it. So I think that's it. I said that, yeah.
You got any electrical projects?
Frank does.
Segue.
Before you go.
Yeah.
I had some questions on a couple of things in here I noticed that were just really out of the ordinary for me.
Yeah.
Number one, in the big picture thing, I noticed that we've set up to purchase trucks and things like that for each year. It looks like that's done on a year-to-year basis instead of part of the 10-year plan.
Yes.
And okay, so those are just done on a year-to-year?
Yes.
Okay. On... I'm going to be a pain here for just a minute. All right, oh, wrong one. Blue. Sorry.
No, that's good.
We talk about lab equipment replacement at the water plant, and we show $300,000 for this year in 2020 of doing that, and then we show $401,000 in 2027 for doing that. Is that a complete replacement of everything in the plant?
There. Well, I don't work in the lab. I can hopefully get the gist here. As we move into the new lab, there's some equipment they have right now that's on very much on its last legs. It's been really neglected. So there's some new, AA?
So the actual lab that we're building, we're funding $600,000 worth of new equipment. And what we've done is looked at anywhere from 5 to up to 10 years of useful life of that equipment. So what you're seeing there is 5 years out or 7 years out, wherever that got plugged in, we're going to replace, like you said, AA, the GCs, RCCM, there's all these acronyms and things that are very expensive.
They've never been budgeted before that, hey, this stuff wears out. They've gotten by with a lot of stuff for a long time, probably past its useful life.
I was just concerned that we were going to just say, okay, everything in here is old now, we got to take it all out, put all new in.
No, a lot of the stuff is going to the new lab, but there's some things that aren't, too.
And it's a bit of a placeholder so that we're thinking ahead as we get closer to 2027, we can say, okay, really we can make it to 2030 probably. And so we remember to budget for those things because they get forgotten about.
And then sometimes the required detection limits for a method changes on the part of the state, and so we have to get new equipment to meet that new detection limit.
Okay. And just a little note on the lab equipment for the wastewater treatment plant. Was it line 125? We say we're going to replace that every 8 years. We show it at 7 years.
Oh, in the writing, it's in 8 years. Okay.
Steve would catch that. Thanks. So
we'll change that.
Hey.
Anything else?
That's what I live for.
Power stuff.
Yeah, and I can see I'm going to have to up my game if I follow Tanner again. I don't have any fancy slides or anything. I just kind of worked in collaboration with Travis. So you guys have the summary list of the projects that we have coming up. Are there any questions on any particular items that you guys had? Otherwise, I know one of the ones that Tanner emphasized was the 402 corridor expansion and power is in kind of the same boat as the other utilities. We have pretty much no infrastructure out there at the moment. We do have a substation in the works for 2024, I believe, and that could shift depending on how the development moves out that way. That $6.7 million number you have in front of you is just for the substation only. So it would be similar capacity-wise to what we put out at Foothills. So the initial build will be 40 MVA transformers, a double switchgear lineup, which would give us a 8-feeder capacity initially. We would be able to expand it with 2 additional transformers and 8 additional feeders as kind of growth happens in that area. But we're also looking at additional expenses for land purchase, land improvements, and actually extending the feeders out into the distribution territory. So probably ballpark number, $12 million. somewhere around there to expand power infrastructure out the 402 corridor to serve all that.
Control unit for the new substation.
6.7 is our estimate for the initial build out. That would be two transformers, double switch gear lineup, and a wall around the substation. So, and the transmission lines, of course, in and out.
John had a look at you.
Why are you guys only given a 3.5% inflation rate? Water's given 4.25.
That's based on input that we get from Alan Kirchmerick, the city's executive fiscal advisor. There's a number of publications that he consults, and it was a different rate that was used that came out for inflation on power projects versus water and wastewater projects.
Okay, thank you.
I was hoping it had something to do with us being more efficient, but.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
There you go.
You can run with that.
Good job.
I like that.
Well played, Frank.
So some of the other major projects that he had listed on there, a significant one is the overhead to underground conversion along 287, which basically covers from 29th Street north up to 71st. And you know, we've had that on the budget for a few years, and it keeps getting pushed to the right based on different circumstances and things like that. But we have kind of rephased it so that we can do certain sections every year for the next 3 years once we actually start. But I think current estimates are somewhere around $3 to $3.5 million to underground the main backbone line along Highway 287 moving north. So.
Along which highway?
287.
Okay. Have you been putting conduit underground the last year or two? Okay. I've seen large conduit spools going underground. I just wasn't sure whose they were.
Yeah, so we've had some significant conduit installations. We worked with water and wastewater on the Boyd Parallel installation. Out by County Road 30.
Specifically on 287.
On 287,
yeah.
We have had some areas where we have done installation packages, and we are doing, we are taking care of like our future needs along with development as things come in certain sections of the
okay.
road. So, yeah. Some of the substation projects that you see listed on there, they're kind of a mixture of development driven and capital projects for replacing aging infrastructure. We do have a, you know, some transformers or large substation transformers that are approaching 40 to 50 years old. So we have plans in place to, you know, replace those as things come up. Everything's, you know, we do have those tested regularly by PRPA folks, and we are keeping an eye on, you know, their performance and things like that. So we are kind of, you know, starting to budget for them just to be prepared, but we don't necessarily replace things just because they're old. So, which I'm not going to go there with that joke. So, any other questions for the power projects that we had listed on there?
I have a general question for all of them with the service center expansion. I see that it's in 2026. Is there going to be an expansion before that because of broadband?
Right now, the municipal fiber enterprise is going to be located up at the Guarantee Bank, which is located just west of Kmart. They're going to lease space up there. That is the best, that's the best place we found to house them, probably in the 3 to 5 year. Maybe it's going to be a little bit longer, according to this. So we think that that can handle all of the personnel that's necessary for that period of time. So, no, we don't have any anticipated expansion. One other option we've talked about is purchasing and renovating the LEDA building that's right next to us. It's being appraised right now. We want to see what that comes out and then what TIs would cost, because we'd have to completely renovate that building. I mean, they've got bedrooms and kitchens and all kinds of stuff in there. So that may be an option. we're really tight on space right now.
Okay.
Has Platte River got any expansions proposed?
They do have some, they do have a new transmission line, I think, extending north from Rawhide up to Wyoming, I think, for one of their new wind projects.
That's for the new 170 megawatt wind project.
Yes,
right.
And they do have some projects slated for their own substation infrastructure as well. But they do help us out with our design and commissioning of our new substation projects, as well as our operation and maintenance on the substations. So they would be involved in the new substation out in the southeast corridor as well.
Okay, I think we're ready for a motion.
I move to recommend that City Council approve the proposed 2020 10-year CIPs for the raw water, water, wastewater, and power utilities.
Second. Okay, is there any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Everybody opposed? Okay. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Good presentation.
We'll talk to Frank about his game.